the University Tower chimes, ringing in another session of Ask the Professor, the show in which you match wits with University of Detroit Mercy professors in an unrehearsed session of questions and answers. I'm your host, Matt Mayo, and let me introduce to you our panel for today. He's always in the upper left. It's Professor Dave Chow.
Pleasure to be here, as always.
How's it going, Dave?
Not too bad. Drove by your house yesterday at the middle of the night, and wow, you guys are brightly lit.
You do not need to like drive by. You can just look out your front window. You could walk 10 feet if you wanted to, you know.
I'm tanning off the glow from your living room, so.
Oh, I see. Yeah, we do have a lot of LEDs. We have a lot of LEDs.
Yes, you do. I can grow my plants for my front yard in the middle of the night off of you.
We had a family discussion at the table last night about putting together, I'm not joking, by the way, just a quick roster of everyone in the family, where we're from, 80 feet away, and then dropping it in everybody's mailbox on your side of the street, because we really don't know any of the people down the other side, Dave.
I did talk to a couple of the neighbors this morning. I don't know if it's going to happen, but we're hopefully going to get like a block party going.
Oh, that's great. That's a great idea.
But here's the thing. I was just reminded of, I think I'm the longest living resident on this street now.
I think you are. You're the dean of the neighborhood.
Dean Dave.
Those, of course, are the dulcet tones of Professor Beth Oljar from philosophy.
Hey, Matt.
I know who you are, Beth. That's all that matters.
Actually, that matters vastly more. And, yeah, way, way more. Not even the same ballpark.
Oh, man. So how have things been going, Beth?
The philosophy learning outcomes are being assessed at the moment. So my head is ready to explode as is. Among other things, it's fundamentally ambiguous whether we're evaluating student performance or the assignment.
Sounds like a philosophical discussion to me.
As somebody who literally makes distinctions for a living, this is a fundamental ambiguity that I was made very uncomfortable by. I mean, that's just the question of what it is that we're doing. I mean,
well, I thought the whole goal is you do not assess their performance at all.
Yes, but if you look at the rubrics, the rubrics are expressed in terms of student performance. Deftly analyzes the basic elements of argument. Elegantly analyzes their assessments of this student performance, which, since I've already done it, is a little confusing.
Interesting.
But the point is, I take it to make sure that the students understood well enough what it was we wanted from them, that their performance somehow says something about whether the learning outcomes have been met.
Right.
I think.
Right. I'm getting a vibe about checking a box and moving on about this whole process here.
The very fact that nobody can really say with any degree of clarity what it is we're doing here seems to me to invite a stop and reflect on the process, but I fear American academics have let that ship sail by. So,
long, long ago. Well, we'll see the whole process through, and then of course we'll see what's on the other side, right?
Possibly my exploded head.
Yes, possibly. Just possibly.
Oh, Dave could draw a calendar for that.
I could. And I have.
Beth exploding heads over the year.
Yeah.
Someone whose head hasn't exploded lately, at least not as far as I know, it's Professor Dan Maggio. Yeah, that's who we're hearing from.
So can I, because back in the day, even though I was not involved, I lived through these assessments and I watched an extraordinary amount of work go into them. And I asked, so when I hear you complain, or not complain, but reflect.
Complain is fine. I'm down with that.
Are the students better off because we've done assessment? What is the point?
I mean, the main point, to be quite frank, is that our accreditation hangs in the balance to having performed the process.
Yeah. Yeah. It's okay. I take three students out of a class of 35. So right away, there's a question about the size of the sample and therefore how representative it is and therefore whether you could get any useful data at all. Sorry to intrude on the expertise of my scientific colleagues, but it's not clear to me how this helps students. It's not clear to me how it helps us either. I mean, we talk to each other all the time about teaching, as we should. Mm-hmm. We talk to each other all the time about assignments and what we want students to get out of them.
Right.
So,
right.
But I'm fine. Thanks for asking.
Dan, I'm so sorry. If I hadn't just come from this meeting and...
No, I was actually really curious.
Dan, your shirt looks like it means business.
Oh, it's my warm flannel shirt. I was cold today. And it's actually, what does it remind you of?
Eddie Bauer?
No, Matt should pick up on this.
I mean, I see some red, white, and blue, right?
It's orange.
Oh, that looks like Tiger colors or Illinois colors.
Oh, I don't think Lance and meant it to be Tigers colors, but it reminded me of the Tigers when I saw it.
So I'll see you at opening day in June, maybe.
Did it get pushed back?
No, it's just there's all these projections that are saying if you can't negotiate for more than 15 minutes, we may not be having a season. That's all. So those, of course, are the dulcet tones of Professor Stephanie Conant of biology, who is a baseball players association union negotiator extraordinaire.
That is all of my baseball knowledge. So please don't ask any other questions. They explained it on the radio the other day, and I was like, oh, that sounds ridiculous. But now I know.
There's something about bringing both sides of any problem together and only getting 15 minutes of discussion that makes you go, what happened at that meeting? Like, seriously. Jeez. Crazy. How's everything over in Ford Life Sciences, Stephanie?
We're still here. Crazy busy.
Good.
I've made my advising list today.
Yay. It is advising time.
There's only 90 names on here. Come on.
Only.
It's a slow term.
You know, if there were literally any way I could help you with that advising load, I would do it. But
we would train you too. Some people like advising. Some people don't. Some people are good at advising. Some people aren't. Yes.
Sounds like a green eggs and ham thing here.
I was pretty good at it.
We're also being joined by Professor Stephen Manning from the Department of Retired. So you've taken that mantle from Diane Manica now that we had her as a visitor.
Yes. Speaking of baseball, I will miss Cactus League baseball next week in Phoenix, unfortunately.
Aww.
That's right. You were supposed to go catch a game, weren't you?
The highlights I have every year I've gone, and next week it's not going to happen.
That's so sad.
That's sad, yeah. They really shouldn't start regular season baseball as early as they do these days, again, because of greed. But it's supposed to be, you know, it used to be called the game of summer, the boys of summer, you know.
Right, right.
And now we start when the snow is still flying and end when the snow is flying.
That's right.
Which is unfortunate. Right. But
yeah, it is. I did see on Twitter the other day, though, Stephen, I've literally waited all week to tell you this, that I shared it with our colleague in biology, Jacob Kagi. He's a big Tigers fan as well. He said, like, if baseball's looking to, like, really pump up the juice a little bit, forget celebrities throwing out the first pitch. Now it's celebrities closing the game. Uh-oh, base is loaded, down by one. Here comes Danny DeVito.
Yeah.
And so we started going back and forth about what kind of local celebrity could accidentally have to close for the Tigers. And yeah. I suggested Mike Morse's mother. I thought that was going to be a nice touch.
There you go.
Only if Irv Nussbaum was still around, you know? I mean,
oh, my gosh.
Oh, jeez. Ollie Fretter.
Well, folks, this is a program where you can send us questions regarding anything. If you stump the panel, you win a prize. Send us a questions in a number of ways. You can email us at atp@udmercy.edu. Find us on Facebook or Instagram, or listen on your favorite smart speaker by asking it to play Ask the Professor at University of Detroit Mercy. Have a brand new set of questions here. Should be tons of fun. Dear panelists, I've attached a set of questions with a very specific topic I think would be of interest to your show and your listeners, some of which I've noticed over the years The listeners seem to resonate with the professors. That's definitely for sure. This list is presidents, but they're pets.
Oh,
I'll defer to the Professor Mayo, what he deems worthy of a passing grade. Accommodations during COVID say, as long as you show up for the show, we pass. Regards, Julie Elder of Poughkeepsie, New York. So here we go with presidential pets. And boy, there was a few here that not have any idea of. It's a list of pets that once had residence at the White House. I'll give you the pet. You tell me the president. So we'll go with a couple softballs to start here. Victory. Victory was a golden retriever. You can picture it running across the White House lawn.
Okay.
Which president?
Truman.
No, it would be, I would.
Was it Kennedy?
It wasn't Kennedy. I'm going to say modern era for this one to, as your clue.
Reagan?
It was Reagan. Yeah, it was Ronald Reagan. Doesn't it just make perfect sense? Golden retriever, slow-mo all the time. Here comes victory. You know?
Wait a minute. It's starting to sound like an Iams ad right about now. I mean, like, geez.
Things are going to get a little quirkier. We'll go all the way to the other side of the spectrum. So this will be definitely an early president. Named his greyhound after Cornwallis.
Washington?
It was Washington. Yeah. Now that is a slap in the face.
Wow.
P.S. I beat you in the war and I named my dog after you.
That's brutal.
Oh. All I can think about, by the way, when we say that is, wait, your nickname is Indiana? We named the dog Indiana, you know? It's like,
I got a lot of fond memories of that dog.
All right, now we're crossing over to the sublime. Who had a cow named Suki grazing on the White House lawn?
This sounds like a Teddy Roosevelt kind of thing, isn't it?
It does, but it's not Roosevelt.
I'm thinking 19th century. Would that be correct?
You're in the wheelhouse. I could give it away in about 10 seconds by saying, my guess is Suki never really got settled in on the White House lawn.
Yeah, the guy who died, Harrison.
Okay.
William Henry Harrison. William Henry Harrison.
Harrison.
She never unpacked.
The cow's name was Suki?
Suki the cow.
Suki the cow.
Yes. So there was a Newfoundland. That's pretty nice. A Newfoundland pup.
Okay.
Named Faithful. Named Faithful.
Wilson.
We'd be for Wilson.
Before Wilson. Well, that's a whole bunch of people.
Another general to narrow it down. I think that's fair to say.
Grant.
It was Grant. I was just about to say my final clue is he was a very important general, but possibly the worst president. And we are being joined now by Professor Mara Livesey. Thanks for joining us, Mara.
Hello. Sorry to be late.
You're fine. Mara, we're taking on some questions here where I am listing the White House-based pet, and you're telling me the president that had that pet.
Oh, fantastic.
There was a cat, and the cat's name was Misty Malarkey Ying Yang.
It sounds like Bush 43.
It does, but you need to go just a little bit further back.
41.
Wait a minute. Who had wacky children? Was it like JFK, maybe?
Carter?
It was Carter. Yeah, Dan hit it. It was Jimmy Carter.
Well, I wouldn't say she's wacky, but
yeah.
Children.
Children.
Yeah,
children.
Youngish.
Yeah. Who had a, oh my, who had a rabbit named Zsa Zsa?
Nixon.
No.
He had a dog named Checkers, I believe.
Yes, he had a dog named Checkers.
That'd be somebody with kids.
Yeah, JFK.
JFK, yeah. I was going to say, you know, you're doing a pretty good job of narrowing it down based on who possibly named these things. You know, like, I have a feeling that Uncle Joe, President Uncle Joe, named Commander. That just feels right, you know, but I don't think that JFK woke up one morning and went, let's go buy a Zsa Zsa, you know?
Well, Dan said someone with, and he had young children when he was president. So actually, it goes to Dan.
Well, he could have named it for other reasons, but
yes, also
who
true.
Knows?
Probably Carolyn.
He wasn't going to name it Marilyn, so I mean
that was the fish.
How about a Belgian sheepdog? It's a big dog. And boy, it must have been a big dog because its name was King Cole. King Cole, the Belgian sheepdog. Not exactly our talkingest president of all time.
Harding? Mm-mm. Who is it? Silent Calvin Coolidge.
Yeah, it was Coolidge. It was Coolidge. Okay. At King Cole, the Belgian sheepdog. Okay, we've heard this president already named as a guess, but wow. 48 unnamed sheep who were allowed to graze on the White House lawn and whose wool was sold in direct benefit of the Red Cross.
Truman.
No, it wasn't Truman. You're thinking positive. You need to think a little more negative.
Couldn't be Jackson.
Mm-mm.
And who sheared the sheep? It's not like you call up one of the cabinet secretaries, hey, can you go shear the sheep? I mean,
this sounds like a Lincoln thing.
It does, but it's later than that. I always am struggling to find the right clue. I mean, aside from Jefferson being essentially like an amateur scientist, I would put this president as our most academic president.
That would be Wilson.
Wilson, yeah. He was the president of a university. It was Woodrow Wilson. That's fairly modern era if you think about it.
PhD in political science.
Yep.
No, how many sheep was it?
48 unnamed sheep. It's a lot of sheep.
Where do you? Oh, I'm just picturing, like, you know, on Pennsylvania Avenue, all the sheep in the front lawn there. I mean, like, mm-hmm. It'd be interesting.
How about Polly, a parrot that lived so long, he outlived both the president and the first lady.
Ooh.
I will narrow things down by saying it's a character in the very energetic stage show known as Hamilton.
Jefferson.
Madison.
Isn't there? Okay, Madison. Hamilton. We got it.
But he wasn't president.
James Madison.
Yeah. Okay.
Someone say Hamilton.
I said Hamilton, but he was never a president.
He showed up on the $10 bill.
He couldn't be president because he wasn't born in the United States.
Right.
That's right.
That's right. Literally unconstitutional.
How about this one? And we'll do it in the reverse, even though I'm pretty sure that's not what Julie intended. I think it would be more fun. Rutherford B. Hayes had a pet cat, a certain kind of cat, that was the first cat of that breed that was brought to the United States.
Okay, you cat people.
Siamese?
It was Siamese. Yes, Siamese.
Mm. Oh, okay.
I'm not sure if we use that term to describe that cat anymore, but that's what it says here.
No, that's still the breed.
Yeah.
That's still the name of the
okay.
breed.
Yeah. What else would you, the cat formerly known as Siamese?
Prince.
Well, Siam doesn't exist anymore. So, you know.
It'd be like a dark point. Sometimes they refer to cats as their colors.
AKA a Ceylonese, maybe.
There we go.
Or a seal point. Yeah.
Okay. Who had a jolly beagle named Freckles? Now that's cute.
LBJ.
That was LBJ. Yeah, Beth knew right off the top of her head.
Well, there's quite a famous picture of him holding the dog up by the ears.
Oh, by its ears. Yeah, that's right. Fun guy that he was.
Oh, he was a hoot. Yeah.
Who had a Norwegian elk hound named Ouija?
Hmm. What, as in the board?
How about there was a live stage show of a musical that mentions this president by name back in December on television? Does that help?
No, it doesn't. Back in December?
No.
There are two presidents mentioned in a very, very famous modern era Broadway musical, and this is one of them. I tried. So Ouija was owned by Herbert Hoover. I was referring to the stage show Annie, where Hoover is mentioned, Hooverville.
I was thinking Annie.
Okay, now we're getting back to, I mean, I don't even know what to do with these. Julie, you did such a great job. Who had a one-legged rooster named Fierce? Named Fierce long before Beyonce came along. Don't think too hard. Don't think too hard.
That actually sounds Truman-esque.
It does, but I was hoping you'd go in a different T direction.
Tyler?
Mm-mm.
Teddy Roosevelt?
Yes, yeah, Teddy Roosevelt. I mean, Teddy Roosevelt seems like the guy who would have a one-legged rooster at the...
He could have a menagerie, wasn't it? I mean, didn't he have like hippopotamus and he ran like a small zoo practically?
Mm-hmm.
Do we get an explanation for the one leg?
We do not. Yeah. However, the name of the bird was Fierce, so we can extrapolate.
It won. That's all you need to know.
Exactly.
You should see the other rooster.
Yeah, the other rooster's shuffling along on a skateboard right now.
Not so fierce. Yes. Going back to the Hamilton cast, who had Cleopatra and Caesar, a pair of horses, in the White House stable?
Wait a minute. There's a stable at the White House?
There was.
Jefferson?
Mm-mm.
Adams?
It was John Adams. Yeah, it was John Adams. Cleopatra and Caesar.
I'm just picturing, like, who maintains this stuff, you know? I mean, I'm assuming they obviously have staff.
Yeah, right.
Back then, slaves.
Mostly, yeah, that's right. Oh, that's okay. True. A couple others, and I'll try to narrow it down because there's some pretty nice trivia here. Thank you so much, Julie, for sending these in. So a president we've already had as an answer, okay, also had a very well-known pair of canaries named Nip and Tuck. It's rather cute.
Sounds Reagan. Sounds like Reagan.
Nip, doesn't Tuck. It? Doesn't it? But it's before Reagan.
Oh, okay.
Johnson?
Mm-mm.
JFK?
Nope, it's before JFK.
Okay.
Carter?
Before Carter.
Ike?
Wait.
It was before Ike.
Not Truman.
FDR? Did he have?
Nope. This president's initials are the same letter for first and last name. We've already had it as an answer.
Herbert Hoover.
It wasn't Hoover, but?
Calvin Coolidge.
It was Coolidge. Yeah. Coolidge ends up with, if you remember, Coolidge was King Cole, the Belgian sheepdog, and a pair of canaries named Nip and Tuck. I think that's kind of a nice little thing there.
What a cute and adorable name. Oh,
okay, for the people who keep track of these things, there was a time when my wife actually had a connection to some of the curators at the White House, and they take this kind of like keeping track of stuff for the presidents very, very seriously.
Mm-hmm. Before they try flushing it down the gold toilet, right?
Also true. But according to the people who keep track of these things, only two presidents did not have any formal pet at any time when they were in the White House.
45.
Trump.
That's right.
Mm-hmm.
And who's the other weirdo?
Poppy Bush. Did he have no pets?
No, this one is actually going back to the surrounding decades of the Civil War.
Jackson?
Mm-mm.
Johnson.
It was Johnson. It was Andrew Johnson.
Yeah. Andrew Johnson. Okay, yeah.
And FYI, because these are the sort of things that they keep track of, Andrew Johnson did not have a formal pet, but it may just actually, in the eyes of history, boil down to Trump, because Johnson made friends with the mice that lived in his master bedroom and fed them during his entire presidency.
Oh.
Counts.
Totally counts. He probably named them. So
there you go. That's the cutoff. I love it. I love it. Very well done, profs. Very well done. All right. We have just a few minutes left here. So it's time to go to, you know what it is, Frank Burrows and the Family Imponderables.
Oh, have they sent a new or are we still on the old?
We're still finishing up, okay. You know, the old stuff. And I think it's a fun one today. Let's talk about what your favorite decade could be. And I know when we hear that, sometimes we immediately go to like fashion or music or something. Let's not narrow ourselves down. It could be for any reason that you like a certain decade.
Didn't we do this?
I thought
we did this one.
Did we?
Yeah.
But I'd like to change my answer, so.
What was your answer, Dan?
I think I said the 70s.
I'm pretty sure you said the 90s.
No, I definitely didn't say the 90s.
All right, somebody's got to roll back tape.
We're going to roll back the tape. We got plenty of time here.
All right, Matt, while we can't rewind the tape, we can rewind on the timeline of the digital audio workstation, and we'll go back to the episode from 2 weeks ago, and this is what Professor Maggio said.
Dan, it looks like you're cogitating.
I'm going to go with the 70s.
70s?
I mean, there are some things about the 90s I like. Nothing culture related, but I say 70s.
And since Professor Stephanie Conant wasn't here on last week's show, we never did get her answer to the question. Stephanie, what decade of music would your favorite be?
Something like within my lifespan?
It doesn't have to be. Go ahead and say.
Makes sense, all right?
No. Because I remember we were making fun of Mara because she's only lived three decades. That's all.
So, I chose the 60s too, because I remember we chose the same thing.
Pretty sure I chose the 60s.
I think I had the 40s and for decades I'd lived through the 70s because I was born in the mid 60s. So I don't really get to count that one.
I mean, I'd probably say the 80s, but I don't know. I mean, when you look back at everything, it's like, we should have known better, but I don't know. You know, like someone was like, the 90s were amazing because there was good music and there was, yes, but like we also just ignored a lot of stuff.
80s had good music.
80s had better music.
Yeah, I'd say the 80s. It's all coming back now anyway.
My parachute pants haven't gone out of style yet, right? Oh.
I think that I'm about to make the same joke I made the first time then, because I was like, as long as nobody chooses the 1920s, then I think we're going to be, just fine. Or maybe the 1920s are all about what you're about. I don't know. Great Gatsby and all that.
Well, there were some fairly happening things going on in the 1920s.
Totally. Yep.
I think the worst choice is the 2020s.
Right. Oh, yeah. I kind of, nobody chose those. So, I mean.
A decade that will live in infamy.
Oh.
30s were pretty bad, too.
The what?
The 1930s.
Kind of rough.
Okay.
I'm writing down now, don't ask this one again. Next time, ask for favorite century.
Yes.
Century. Gotcha. 16th.
No. Well, that's cool because we could like go back to the 5th century BC. I mean,
exactly. You know. Exactly. I knew that your eyes were going to light up.
Or the 18th century, the Age of Enlightenment, which unfortunately ended. So,
all good things, Beth. All good things. I'm afraid, professors, we've reached the end of what all of this great learning can teach us. So, the time has come to say goodbye, Dave.
See ya.
Beth.
Bye.
Stephen.
Goodbye.
Stephanie.
Goodbye.
Dan.
Goodbye.
And Mara.
Goodbye.
And now these words.
You can email Ask the Professor at atp@udmercy.edu or visit the Ask the Professor Facebook page.
Ask the Professor is produced and directed by Michael Jason and Brian Masonville, and our executive producer is Professor Jason Roach. Until next week, I'm your host, Matt Mayo.